Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
For those that are new and haven't been on before, give them a little background about who you are, what you're doing, where you came from.
Sure. Oh, where I came from, my parents. No. They call me the heir. I live in Connecticut now. I had a long corporate career. You know, I'd say for 20 years, 12 of them at AIG, building, you know, operations and data departments, being a finance manager, being a technology manager, project leader, all kinds of stuff. A few years I worked at Prudential, and another year I worked at Ingersoll Rand. So I had some, you know, manufacturing experience. But in 2017, I had survived 10 quarterly rounds of layoffs, not round 11. So in 2017, I was laid off of AIG, and I had to find something new. So I stumbled upon this term called Bitcoin. And right, I had seen some commercial about it, and I looked at it, and I was like, "This is a database." And I had built databases all my life, and I'm like, "I could figure out this a new age of databases." What I didn't realize I was walking into was a war between boomers and millennials, a war between people and the banks, geopolitical crises, all kinds of like the media bashing and trashing crypto and saying Bitcoin's been dead several hundred times. I had no idea I was walking into that. And when I walked into the Wild West, there was no regulations whatsoever. And there's some today, but there was nothing. And, you know, so I quickly got an entrepreneur's lesson in life, you know, in the first year. I had a couple heart attacks in the end of 2018 because the crypto winter was 2018. And that was a struggle. I lost my business. I lost my New York Jets tickets. I lost my bicycle that I had when I was 21, and a lot of things. But I said, you know, I'm staying in the game. So I did, and I built a crypto portfolio, which is now in the tubes, down 80%, but everybody's is, you know.
We're back. It wasn't last year.
Yeah, no, it's worse now. But hey,
what is that? Real quick, touch on this a little bit, because somebody actually said to me the other day, one of my guest speakers called out because this happened to him, right? And he lost a lot. What is happening right now in the market with Bitcoin?
Well, it's the same with every market. Every market's in the tubes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any market that's good right at the moment because of inflation, you know, and other crises that are going on in the world, you know. But, you know, when's it going to reach a turn? When's the bear market going to end? And when's the bull market going to start? No one knows, you know. But, you know, as long as you're building for the future and not selling, if you don't sell, you don't lose, you know. So, hey, you just keep going on, right?
Okay, so talk to me real quick about, and I didn't mean to interrupt you earlier, but explain to me when you say you built this portfolio, what does that mean? Help put into perspective for what you've now built from, on your personal side, and then what you're doing with it now.
Sure. My personal side, I built a crypto portfolio, about 15 cryptos, and I've researched, you know, tens of thousands of them. you just read all the documents, learn everything you possibly can. And one of the things that I learned, you know, in the past year and a half, I've been a podcast host in crypto and blockchain, where I've interviewed founders, entrepreneurs, co-founders, executives across the world. And, you know, in areas of the NFTs, metaverses, blockchain, decentralized finance, all the areas. And, when I started, you know, my podcaster posted on the Irish Tech News, they had three countries that they really had predominant interest where the audience was. And now that's 165. And I interviewed founders from 50 countries. So when I started, I said, you know, I want to do it the right way. And that is, you know, build what I did at AIG. And, you know, because I built the AUM department, I built the global departments from scratch. So I had that background experience. And so far, you know, I was able to do that. And then in the process, learn a whole bunch of stuff. And when you think you know one thing and you think you know the same thing for 3 years, and then someone comes on your show and tells you something completely different, you're like, your mind is like completely blown.
Totally.
You know?
Totally. Okay, so I want to dive into a little bit about some of those things that have really been your aha moments as you've done this. But before we do, what really drove you to the podcast? Why'd you start?
The editor called me. He said, I know you're not doing anything. You know? And that was right after my book, Regeneration X, came out. And I wanted to push that. You know, and I learned that people don't really read intergenerational cultist kind of books. So I'm like, all right. And so it's right behind me, the yellow X over here, my shoulder. So I started interviewing people, and I had no background in podcasting. I had no background in speaking. And the thing is, I used to speak really fast. Where no one could really understand me. And even like my mom and my brothers and my wife growing, you know, they always told me that I talk too fast and they don't understand what I'm saying. And I had to learn how to get over all the speech issues I had, you know, stuttering, slam, like all that stuff. I had it a little bit, you know, and then quick to be heard. And I had to put the brakes on and learn how to talk. So that was a big thing.
A big experience. Well, I'm super impressed with what you've done. And I'm, even as we were talking backstage, there's so many topics I want to dive into and really where this relates to where things are going, you know, with this pandemic opening up so much awareness around these different topics. Real quick though, dive in or tell me a little bit about blockchain ethics. What does it mean? Sure. Yeah. Why, you know, everything I hear about blockchain is that the benefit to blockchain is this, secured link, right? Process that you have no, help me out. What words am I looking for? Explain blockchain.
Okay. Explain blockchain. It's a distributed centralized ledger.
There you go.
Ledger. You know, that's all it is. And from a technology perspective, you know, what it enables is identity for the unidentified, banking for the unbanked or unbanking of the banked, depending on what country you live in, and a voice for the voiceless. And the voice for the voiceless is where I come in.
Okay.
So, like, I talk to people who wouldn't be otherwise covered in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. You know, I cover stories. Not only do I talk to founders, I've talked to artists, and their stories are amazing. And one of the artists I most recently, not most recently, but a month and a half ago, I interviewed, her name is Arabella. She has terminal cancer, and she uses hemp every day, legal marijuana every day. Mm-hmm. And she's not dead, you know, and that's helped her to recover or be healthy right now, despite her death sentence from the doctors.
Yeah.
So it's amazing.
So talk to me about how blockchain plays a role. You know, what are the ethics behind this that you talk about?
Sure. Well, my ethics are basically looking at, you know, the last two books. The first book, Blockchain Ethics, was probably the only book that really covered the ICO days of 2017.
Okay.
So if you want to know what the history of blockchain was in 2017, you should read that book.
Okay.
The Bridge to Abundance one. The recent two, Arise from the Ashes, is when I relaunched the topic. I answered one simple question, and that question that was put in the media, they say NFTs are stupid. You know, I said, are NFTs stupid? So I tell stories of art through four artists' life stories and what they've been able to do and accomplish. And one of the artists, his name was Sir Darren Cullen. He started Graffiti Kings. He's a graffiti artist in the UK. All the street art you see in there in Philadelphia and all over, he was the original inspirer of that street art. Is it stupid? I definitely don't think so. You know, and, you know.
Speaking of, this weekend I was in Nashville, and I rode scooters the other day chasing graffiti to take pictures of it. Like, it's awesome. It's artwork.
Yeah, yeah. And definitely not stupid. And then the last one was fighting honorable battles. That there's been Bitcoin's been pronounced dead in the media 450 times. Actually, probably more than that. And over the 14 year life. And guess what? It's not dead. And it's still not dead. And it's not going to be dead. You know, and so those narratives out there are to scare investors, especially retail investors, from not investing in it, you know, so the institutions can come in. And I'm like, you know what? Retail people should, you know, and if you go back to my book, The Regeneration X, I talk about how not only was I laid off in 2017, people were laid, like people of our generation, X generation were laid off. You know, and not allowed back in the door, you know, and that's not ethical, you know, and yeah. The algorithms were set up that we couldn't get back in. And, Bitcoin is an opportunity. It's a way to recreate yourself and your career. And it might not be Bitcoin, you know, it could be any other of the 13,000, you know, cryptocurrencies or digital assets. All have ecosystems. All are built with, you know, amazing teams and things they're being used and are being adopted. Learn one or two or three, you know, or a few, and then be able to use our skills and abilities because we are able to you know, look to sit beside or in between that analog and digital divide and make heads and tails out of both sides and apply the technology and rebuild our careers. So that's, you know, what I was getting with, and I proved that it's not dead. In fact, these are 16 of my podcast interviews. It shows what they're building using Bitcoin. So, you know, I had to dispute that.
So talk to me about some of this stuff you've learned now, right? Like for me, one of my favorite parts is the innovation and the people that are just so forward thinking with new ways to sequester carbon and do things better and do them right more ethically, right? Uh-huh. And so I'm curious from you, from your perspective in this, you know, blockchain and Bitcoin space, what is some of the real innovation that you've seen and most exciting, you know, conversations you've been having?
You know, that's that's a lot of them. As far as the carbon, there's a company that I interviewed, a founder that I interviewed last month. Yeah. He's going to be at Consensus when I'm going to be at that in June in Austin. And he's going to be presenting, you know, at a booth or not the main stage, but one of the stages, what his company's doing. And they are doing, you know, they're doing indexing of carbon credits. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting from a carbon perspective, you know. And then, you know, I've interviewed people who have, you know, associated with the UN, who are building village wallets in Africa, you know, people who fled Ukraine. You know, last week I interviewed a woman, she fled Ukraine, and then I had her crying on the interview. I didn't mean to make her cry, but, you know, she said, "We Ukrainians are a fearless people." And I disagreed with her. You know, she said, "What do you disagree about?" I was like, you know, fearless is when you don't recognize that there's fear. Courage is when you recognize there's fear, you know, acknowledge it, you know, look at it straight in the eye and move forward powerfully anyway, you know, and then she lost it. But, you know, it was things like that from like my podcasts are not the typical podcasts are, what does your token do? What does your blockchain do? What is the price going to be? What does the market say? I don't really get into that. I get into, okay, 15% about who you are, your background, 15% about what your company does, okay, all of it, and then 70% high-level important topics where I bring their thought leadership to the forefront.
Yeah.
And everybody who's starting a business, on or an artist, or you name it, has thought leadership buried down in there they haven't been able to communicate, and I extract that thought leadership and place it out there. And that helps them.
Okay, so talk to me about some of these leaders, right? What is some of the stuff you're hearing? And speak to me about Ukraine. You've interviewed a number of people from Ukraine. What are you hearing and seeing compared to what the news is projecting, or maybe what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so the news makes it sound like, okay, this madman Putin attacked Ukraine out of nowhere. Unprovoked, out of nowhere. He's a mad dictator. He's a madman. that's not the truth. You know, he might be that. He might be those things. Okay. You know, he's a general. He might be all those things, and I'm not going to dispute that. What I'm disputing is he attacked out of nowhere. You know, we used to have, Ukraine used to be part of the Soviet Union. Yeah. And there's still a group of people there, a faction of people, kind of like Trump supporters, and they're here, who are, you know, who in Russia there, who think that the Soviet Union should still get back together. You know, they believe that with all their core conviction, right? So the Ukrainians knew there was something coming, and they'd known it for 8 years. They were preparing for this war for 8 years. You know, they knew they're going to be attacked someday. You know, there's a lot of, you know, social, cultural change in the country. And they were ready for it. The buildings got destroyed, but what they built is a state and a smartphone, which is, you know, which I'm exploring for my next book, because I had all these interviews, you know, where they are so technologically and digitally advanced that, you know, that has something to do with the money that we sent over there. That's something to do with the attack. Their telecommunication towers were down, but their internet was not. Their digital assets were not. And a lot of the exchanges that you see around the world in crypto were built by Ukraine or Ukrainians. So, you know, they are technologically savvy, you know, so, you know, that was never reported in the news. You know, but the fact is that I talked to people who were under the rubble, where they're like in the basement bomb shelters, and people who fled the country, and other people who, another founder, Pradeep, with Solve.care, he was in Florida. He flew to there and started building up shelters on the border of Poland. You know, you just don't do that if you don't care. And it's really, you know, there's a lot that's there that people don't talk about, that the media doesn't talk about, tell us. So you have to dig under the hood.
Yeah. Okay, so when you did this, talk to me, you said that, you know, they're very intelligent, obviously, people. Talk to me about what is their role, or what's the role in Ukraine on the global market as far as digital currency or assets?
Oh, it's huge. A lot of the good, great developers are from there, you know. Okay. Need them to, you know, to move the ball forward. I mean, they have, like, a lot of the exchanges you wouldn't think of, they were built by Ukraine, you know. And kind of like, you know, SQL shops are, you know, a lot of the Indians are good with the SQL shops, you know. The Ukrainians are great with this technology, you know. So they're necessary. And then all the natural resources in that country, you know, there's so many natural resources there. It's amazing. So it's a big, you know, I think hub.
It's a big hub, you said?
Yeah, hub might be the right, not wrong word, but it's important. And what else is important is, these power structures like the U.S. and Russia are on the decline, right? And so other nations like Ukraine could also create a state and a smartphone, be a digitally independent and sovereign nation without needing to have that nuclear arsenal buildup that the old traditional power structures did. So you can have a rogue, you can have, I don't know what we call it, rogue, but you have a small nation be really advanced because they're building their economy digitally. That's important.
Okay, so talk to me about that. You know, we talk about thought leadership and moving forward, because it's such a different and new way of thinking, especially when you're looking at bridging, say, the U.S. government, right? And the way of currency and the way we transact. Talk to me about where you see things really moving and shifting, and where that value at, you know, who's leading the game?
Smaller countries like El Salvador, like Tonga, that's recently had a, you know, earthquake. They said they're going to adopt, you know, digital currencies. South Korea, you know, a lot of small nations, and Vietnam is one of the leaders, and so is Nigeria, you know, and there's so much innovation happening in Africa. You know, there's so many smaller nations that you don't think of on a global, you know, economic scale that are adopted. Like, we don't really need Bitcoin in the U.S. Right, we don't really need it. We have. I mean, it's great for people who are marginalized, absolutely, 100%. But, you know, we don't need it like a lot of other nations need it that are living under tyranny. You know, so you see that opportunity, and you see the people creating, you know, digital economies where they can be self-sovereign or independent. That's a huge deal.
When this war happened, or when Russia attacked Ukraine or came into Ukraine, right? Mm-hmm. Where do you think the role, or what role was played in this digital asset or a digital currency and ability to move money quickly into the country?
Right? A lot of donations. A lot, you know, FTX, Everstake, some major exchanges help facilitate the money to help fight the war. Also, a lot of artists from the Ukraine created NFTs, and those NFTs, they were selling the NFTs to help fund, you know, the war, to help fund their fight back in the war and give it to the army, and help build that. So I have a lot of pictures from the artists there, who sent me what they created as far as the NFTs and as far as the artwork they drew. Okay. So, I have a couple that I bought. You know, they were inexpensive as compared to the Bored Apes, you know,
yeah.
But, you know, that was to support them. So, you know, there's a lot of great, artists and a lot of great, exchanges, a lot of, you know, have collected money and facilitated that, you know, internally. And in the past, you know, might have, you know, these entities that, you know, NGOs that might have collected money, but not distributed where it was needed. And this money is going directly where it's needed. So that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's traceable and trackable, right? Because now it's on a blockchain where we know exactly whose hands are touching it or where it's being distributed. And I think that becomes very powerful, especially for me as a donor, knowing, right? So much reservation or hesitation goes into putting money into these campaigns because how much actually goes to those that their house was blown up or their farms that are being heavily affected. And shout out to all of our members and anybody that we know within the association and the industry over in Ukraine, or in the entire area, right, that is supporting the country, because we know a lot. And I've seen some crazy pictures come across my phone recently where farms are being attacked and equipment's being blown up. And the amount of number of resources that are being used is... yeah, it's gut-wrenching. So it's interesting to me, the more that I've learned about this is really a tool that we have, you know, that's accessible to quickly transact and move money to the needs, right? Mm-hmm.
And not just money. Ownership.
Okay.
Rights, property rights, you know, anything you think of, you know, okay. Use it as a tool for that.
Okay. See, and this is stuff that the innovation part, right? We don't know what we don't know. And I do not dive into this enough. And so what I've learned in all of this in this last few months is I've really started to dive into data is it's not my strong suit. So I love having these conversations because I do. I feel like I'm a sponge. I want to learn more.
Don't feel bad. Being able to make qualified business inferences using data is not something that, you know, it's not being a kitchen analyst. It's a skill that you acquire over a decade at least, you know, I did over 20 years. But it's, you can't just come in the door. And that's a problem with one of the parts of the equity markets today. You know, when we were laid off, another group of people walked in, the older group of people walked in the door and said, "Hey, data's new." And they were handed C-suite jobs, not being qualified to be there, you know, and that wasn't new to me. In fact, it was the only corporate job I could get, you know, a lot of times. Oh, you build databases. You're not going to work in finance. You build databases. Okay. You know, so I built databases and then I couldn't get back in. And then you have people who no data experience being the chief data officer, you know, that made no sense. And that weakened a lot of the tech and company, a lot of companies, it weakened them. You know, the stock price was booming because the market was good. But when you peel back the hood, you look to see what's there, you know, you're missing a lot of skill, you know?
Yeah. Well, again, the data piece is, somebody said, and I've actually said this multiple times, what does the hemp industry need most to move forward? And a lot of people say processing or, you know, genetics or seeds. And I say data. We've got to be able to make better decisions about, and look what happened to the CBD industry. Right? It tanked and we had this huge overproduction. And I think had we had more data available or accessible, we could have made better business choices.
From the business perspective, Yes, I 100% agree. From the perspective of retail consumers, it's more than that.
I agree.
And it's kind of the same thing as crypto. You know, you need the media to not trash and bash the industry and put any people to analyze and put things on a level playing field. And actually, that's been a big part of my investment mandate is navigating the news, you know, in order to sift through, you know, what's fact versus fiction. And, you know, once you know what that is, then, you know, and it's not easy, but I have a process to do it. I'm happy to tell you if you want to know, you know, so what I do and what I've done for the past 4 years is I take an article. I mean, any article, there's a lot out there that I disagree with. Okay. I say, okay, that's just not right. You know? And, when I go through that article, I said, okay, what do I disagree about it? You know, a lot of times the underlying assumptions are faulty. It's supposed to be where you put information together, data together, and then, you know, you come up with a hypothesis and you back it up. A lot of the articles are, this is a data point and this is my opinion. Well, guess what? Your opinion's off. You know, your opinion's wrong. You're not qualified to make that opinion a lot of times. You know, what's your background? What are you talking about? I don't know. I don't draw the two together. So then I start researching the things I disagree with to try to find out why I disagree with them and if I'm wrong or not. That takes a little bit of time.
Sure.
As you do it more, you get used to it. And then find out things to support your point, right? And then, you know, bridge that gap. Okay, how can I apply it in my life? You know, this lesson in my life, and then think forward. How am I going to do that?
Okay. So speaking of this, right, and bridging this gap in the comment you just made of applying this to our lives, or applying, you know, what's being presented as an opportunity for us to move real estate, move assets, move anything, right? More securely with better contracts. How does somebody like me get involved with the association? What's the benefit? How do we really take advantage and merge these two very forward-thinking industries?
It's really the same. Like, blockchain is not new. Satoshi Nakamoto, when he created Bitcoin, he did not create any new tech. He used old tech. You know, and you just put it together. You put blocks together with chains. Okay. Hemp, the plant,
is not new.
It's not new. It's old. It's old. There's time.
But you're right.
But the uses and the implementations of the innovations surrounding both are new and in many ways the same. You know, so you're like, okay, I want to think of a concrete example. And at the moment, I can't. But it's really this, like, how do I take this age old, you know, thing, and how do I apply it to solve a world problem? You know, for hemp, it's easy. You know, I'll go back to my artist, you know, I talked about earlier, medical marijuana. You know, I actually have hemp almost every single day. I go to Clean Juice, which is down the street, which is a smoothie, and I add a protein and I see what kind of protein, a hemp protein. So for me, it's helping me get healthy, you know, but people that a common person doesn't know that needs to know it, you know, for blockchain, it's easy. Okay. The bank's going to pay you 0.25% in your savings account, and crypto is going to pay you a lot more than that. 7%. Would you rather have 0.25% or would you have 7% on a stable coin? Oh, okay. Well, it's 28X. Oh, okay. When you put it that way, it's really simple, but it's not being put that way. And our job is to put things in a light that people can easily understand, and then they'll get it.
I need to take some of your classes. I'm going to listen to more of your podcasts. Yeah. How do other people that are listening get in touch with you, and how do they find your podcast?
Well, right now, the podcasts are on the Irish Tech News. You know, that there's going to be a format change coming in September.
Okay.
And I can't disclose that right now.
Yeah.
It's going to make some people angry. You know, but when you're making a change, you know, you have to I have a 6-step process when you're making a change, right? I have to recognize when I'm angry, and then also be grateful for, you know, the opportunities that I had, and I had opportunities to interview 184, you know, amazing founders, you know, across the world. That's great. And then, you know, you come up with a plan, and you run that plan by a few trusted friends, and then you implement the plan to a T, and then they get angry, you know? So, there's gonna be a format change, but that format change is going to be good, because before I was in a lane of, okay, founders in crypto and blockchain, that was too narrow, you know? And going forward, it's going to be people who've been maybe put on the sidelines by life. What's your story? How do you see getting out of it? You know, using these new tech, using, you know, blockchain or hemp or artificial intelligence or smart cities. So expanding the tech and also drawing back to a more common person base where more people can identify and relate. So, you know, that's going to be a change that I plan on putting in after I take the summer off, because I'm exhausted right now.
That's so cool. Okay, you just said some things. I was literally just typing a question to say, you know, outside of the carbon trading that you mentioned earlier, or the medical, you know, cannabis or high THC, you know, and use of or distribution of, how else do you see blockchain in the industry? And then you said smart cities. What does that look like? Because I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, we want to build a smart city with hemp.
Wow.
It's really? A thing. Yeah. Especially with the amount of carbon hemp sequesters and where it plays in a role there. Also in it, you know, its life cycle analysis on durability or fiber quality, and, you know, being able to really redirect the supply chain and, you know, localize it for distribution. And then I go back to tracking the, anyways, I could go on and on about examples where I think this, now that I just unfolded some things, I think it could be used.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I did for my Regeneration X book,
yeah, you know,
people would tell me I'm not a researcher. I researched all the findings that came out of the India Smart City project over the last decade.
Okay.
And I took them and I took my findings and I put it in the framework of the United Nations sustainable goals. You know, goals.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, this is what can be done. This is what could be done. Right now, you know, I can't tell you what the contents is because I haven't looked at that section in a couple of years, but it's a good section. You know, and there's a lot of like tangible things that I learned that, you know, that could be applied, and hemp does fit into those sustainable goals, you know? So I have to revisit that, but I'm happy to have the conversation with you guys, you know, about that, because, you know, I do have that wealth of knowledge.
I'm going to send you, when we get off of here, I just did an interview with a young lady last week about, or week before last, about how hemp plays such a major role in the sustainability goals. Mm-hmm. And she basically went through and calculated what the impact is on each of them. And it's pretty impressive.
Wow. That'd be great.
I'd be curious too, how we could potentially collaborate after you're off of break to really help bring awareness around the sustainability side. Right? How do we create and do better for more people by incorporating smart technology and resources, natural resources, instead of extracting?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to have those interviews. You know, on the podcast, like I said, I'm going to be, you know, branching out, you know, and incorporating, you know, new other technologies into my conversations. And that's going to be, you know, really important. I'm happy to do that. I wanted to do that. I just didn't realize I was in such a tight, narrow niche that nothing else fit, you know? But now, you know, cause the core of my podcasts, like I said, are, you know, not just talking about what's going on in the world, right? It's really, you know, a mindset type interview. A lot of the people who are creative, I get that they're who are entirely left brained. I get them to start thinking right brain. People who are analytical, I start letting them think, you know, creatively. And being able to move from the left and right brain is not an easy task. Somebody can't say, oh, I can do that. You can't, without help, and you need somebody who's qualified to do it. And I was actually trained in 2017 by one of the top coaches in the world in Canada, who, you know, she saw, I don't know what she calls her program now, Full Mind program. She taught me one little thing, and that's how to bridge that gap, how to move back and forth and toggle between those two and use that as a strength. And I've mastered that over the past 5 years. So I help my guests. I don't tell them. They don't know what's happening. But when they, at the end of the interview, they're like, oh, that was fun. I thought of things in a new way. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, because I was helping guide you. But, you know, I could definitely have this conversation. So if people are stuck in the idea of like, what else is there to do? You know, what can I do? Well, I can help extract that, you know, from your thoughts so that you can see what that is. And then you can start to imagine what's possible.
Okay, so I'm in. I'm all about learning what I don't know. And being in the industry that I am, there is so much innovation, right? And looking at how do we stay ahead of this and knowing history about the plant and how it was banned and who got involved. It's important, I think, for me to be able to, or for the industry in general, to be able to have a group that can really get together and be forward thinking or look at these different perspectives. And so I'm interested, yeah, really coming from your angle and the involvement, because again, I think it comes back also to integrating traditional practices. And you kind of mentioned this in the beginning with these wars that you're seeing, right? Of especially agriculture, or I had multiple people say, hey, how do you think the USDA is really going to take, or what, you know, what do you think their opinion is going to be of these grants that are being submitted around crypto and, you know, digital assets. And so I'm curious from your perspective to reference back to those wars you mentioned as what are you seeing and how do we bridge that gap?
You know, we, I just had how many people, a bunch of like, I've been to a bunch of funerals, you know, in the past. And you know, a lot of the impacts are people our age, you're not people who are older, but people are. And I'm like, what's going on? What happened is we're the first generation to be impacted by both big pharma and big farming, you know? So you have a lot of, you know, chemicals that are being used that were never used before. You know, a lot of different processes that were not used, you know, 20 years before, you know, we came on the earth, right? They have been. We were the first ones to be subjected to this. So, and it has an impact. It causes a shorter lifespan, you know? So what can be done? Research, you know, we've got to do research on what's happened because, you know, right now it's just an opinion, you know, but that opinion is real. When the friends that you grew up with as kids who traded baseball cards with, you know, pass away, you know, and you hear about it that they died and you're like, wow, you know. So yeah, there's going to continue to be wars, and there's going to continue to be, you know, corporate interests that are involved, lobbyist interests that are involved. But, you know, there's a lot more that needs to be thought out and a lot more that needs to be researched and a lot more that needs to be educated. And I think we're just in the first inning.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your opinion on adoption, especially on our, I don't want to necessarily reference just the government, but these traditional ways or ways of exchanging capital, you know, where do you really see that adoption or what do you see that looking like as all of this scales and moves forward?
No, there's a new way to do things. Like I'll give you an example. My podcasts are all web 2 right now. Right. So I asked, you know, coaches to for advice on how to monetize because
yeah,
I haven't made a dime, you know, on what I've done. I haven't. If there's any money made, Irish Tech News takes it, or the guests get the benefit, or the PR firms tell them that there's a podcast fee, and I don't see that podcast fee. So my work is all, you know, in the public and not my own, but for Web3, you know, what I can do is I can create my own platform. And since I never got paid, I own all the content, you know, I'm the content owner.
Yeah.
if you put something on YouTube, you're not the content owner because YouTube's paying you. But if you don't get paid for anything that you do, you're the owner. So I can create my own platform, and I can create, you know, in a way that perhaps I can tie what I've done back to an NFT and then sell the podcast, you know, as the owner of the podcast. So, you know, that's one example of how you move from Web 2 to Web 3, taking ownership of what you've done, you know. And the same can be in any area, like in finance, you know, do I have to put my money into a bank and earn, you know, 0.25%? Or can I buy crypto, stake my coins wherever I want to stake them, and earn a lot more? So it comes down to everything being in, you know, being in control of, you know, what you own and do, and really taking that ownership. So, you know, do I want to own hemp stock, or do I want to be involved in investing into a farm? What's my choice? You know, I have some choices here. So, you know, so basically not being a victim of circumstance, but rather taking action and ownership for the future.
Okay. So you brought up a couple of things when you mentioned investment, right? Where do we, what part do we want to put this into? I've had a couple of people talk about DAOs.
Okay. Right?
And utilizing this new way of exchanging assets as a way to generate revenue or capital to do good for the industry or for the globe or the nation or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you know and where you see those really playing in a role in the development of a new industry like hemp?
Yeah. Well, the DAO is the decentralized autonomous organization where the governance is not up to a dozen boomers who are appointed by the friends,
right?
You know, it's up to all the community members who are participating and own tokens or whatever, own voting rights and voting shares. And that's much more democratized, you know? So all they had to do was really find a cause, you know, for creating an organization and for moving that organization forward. And I've seen some DAOs really work really well. Like, there's one called Padawan DAO, and what they do is they help each other attend conferences. And I couldn't attend a conference a couple of weeks ago, and I submitted, you know, I gave them the ticket. So, and they distributed it. But I know Wyoming and I know Texas are two states that are really supporting the DAO structure. And Wyoming especially, because it opens up new opportunities for businesses to be there. And, you know, you don't have to be subjected to a centralized form of control. You know, when a lot of the people who are older and in that control don't want to see innovation occur, you know, so if you're younger or want to see innovation happen, then you should be, in my view, you know, really in favor of the DAO so you can be a participant in that whole ecosystem.
So I want to do this for the industrial hemp industry. I just think that, and it's funny you say Wyoming. I'm from Wyoming. I just sent you a little message on your email with another name to connect you to also. Those are two areas, Wyoming and Utah, where I'm really passionate about building this industry and growing and really to hit those rural communities and desolate lands and opportunity zones and utilizing it, sequestering carbon from Wyoming or wherever is still sequestering carbon.
I definitely see you. You could definitely start a DAO. Definitely. You know, and people will join you. And when you put up the purpose of the DAO out there, people you don't even know and haven't even met will want to participate.
Yeah, well, and again, I think this goes back to that alternative way of transacting, right? That I feel like a lot of these traditional methods, especially in agriculture and even construction industry and some of these others are almost stuck in their ways, right? And by opening up a DAO, it gives this opportunity for people who have done really well in digital currencies to be able to donate and make a difference and exchange without going through these other traditional methods. And so, I'm kind of curious. Do you have anything else you want to add there or anything else you want to point out?
You said that stuck in our ways, right?
Yeah.
We are stuck in our ways because of the lobby industry in the country.
Yes.
You know, very powerful. Like, very powerful lobby industry. You can even saw it, you know, 2 days ago with that unfortunate with the massacre, you know. And I'm in Connecticut where they had, you know, another massacre a dozen years ago. And we've had a 200 or more so far. And there's, you know, there's the event and there's a public outcry. And then there's talk about guns being reformed and then the lobbyists get involved. And there's like, oh, we're not going to do anything. Oh, and then you have another one, you know, so we're stuck in our ways because of structures that exist right now that should probably be rethought, you know, and it impacted every industry. And I was in the insurance industry, you know, for years. Yeah. And what they did to the insurance industry is they commoditized it. They made it all about price. Yeah. And the insurance contracts are still from 1977. You know, and there's been no change. And there's been no it's been horrible change to the airline industry, you know, and all the things that you see there. And it's everything's made about price and commoditized. And it didn't used to be like that. Right. You know, it used to be a difference. It used to be an impact. It used to be, you know, social ethics around things. And there's not anymore. So I think we need to put them back in.
And you think that blockchain or this system has a better method of giving? Let me rephrase that. What I hear often is the traceability and the accessibility to the information, I guess, mm-hmm. makes it the transparency. Right. Makes it more appealing. It's what gives that security back. It's what gives me as a consumer the security to know what are my dollars going? What am I buying? Who am I supporting? What's the company's truth? Right. Because there's been so much garbage spewed everywhere about and especially around greenwashing, for example, or ethically sourced or U.S. made. You know, I hear over and over again, well, it says U.S., but it was really made in Mexico. It was really sown somewhere else. And so
yeah, it's almost U.S.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Okay. So any highlights, who out there is really doing it right? And if I want to get involved, what is a good step for me to first take? Is it an investment in coin? Is it, you know, setting up an NFT to all of these digital assets that I have on, you know, of interviews and platform, you know what I mean? Like where do we start in getting more involved and really converting to this digital asset?
Okay. I'm going to answer that in two parts. The first part is all the technical stuff you said about blockchain is right. What's missing, what people are doing, what's working that people are doing right is an eye of altruism. You know, like Charlie Lee, the founder of Litecoin, he built Litecoin from an altruistic perspective. You know, altruism is very, very, very important and not one of the things I looked at. But when you add altruism to the technology, then you're like, okay, you know, I understand it now. Now, I am starting to work with some friends on the side, you know, who asked me for help. And I don't tell them, oh, you should buy X coin or you should do, because if you don't have a conviction for that coin, you are going to sell. You know, and the market turns bad and the price goes down, like, oh, well, that didn't work out for me. Very easily. But if you develop a conviction on what this could be used for and how you see yourself fitting into that ecosystem for the future, then you're never going to sell, you know. And I have 15 coins and I'm committed to, you know, helping the ecosystems on each of them, you know, do well. So, and they are actually stuff that I did in my career. Like one's a middleware coin. I built middleware. I understand it. You know, if you buy things that you don't understand, you're not going to keep it. You're like, it's going to fall by the wayside because of, what's that word? Alchemy, you know? So that's one. But my friends, I don't tell them buy X coin. I say, read the Satoshi Nakamoto Bitcoin white paper first, you know? You will not understand it. You will not understand it the first time or the second time or the third time you read it. But by time 30, you might start to get it. Okay.
You'll pick up on some of the words.
You'll pick up on some of the words. This is what you do next. I tell them to read William Mulgear's The Business Blockchain.
Okay.
Or listen to it. I tell them to read Bitcoin Revolution by Don Tapscott. And I've interviewed both Don Tapscott and Alex Tapscott. And I tell them to read some other books and I tell them to check out some websites like Chainlink Ecosystem and look at all the partnerships. And then there's like 1,000 partnerships. Learn what all the partnerships do. You know, this is before you put any money into it. You know, I want you to learn what you're buying before you buy it, because if you don't, then you're not going to stay.
Right.
So I want to train you for the future. And once you know how to fish, then you're on your own.
I love it.
You know, but I can help them learn how to fish.
Okay. Well, I want to learn. I actually am very interested in the digital asset piece for our media that we produce. Right. And being able to, or the event attendees, or the number of times things are rewatched, or subscription model. I'm curious about how does that work and how can we do that so that we maintain ownership of it?
Yeah. We can talk offline.
Well, we're about out of time. And so I want to give a shout out to everything you're doing. I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited about giving security even back to our farmers. I mean, my list could go on the digital side, because I really realize more and more that it's the future. It is what we have to be able to pivot, and we have to be able to look at this from a different angle. And kudos to you that's been so much further ahead. And really, I feel like I've been a stick in the mud, not because I'm not interested. It's that it is so foreign to me. And my mind does not think in this way. And so I shouldn't say it doesn't. It needs more practice. I need to exercise it.
As you do more practice,
you
will have a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
You might have multiple paradigm shifts. And then you say, oh, you know?
Like, totally.
I interviewed Craig Wright. Not Craig Wright. I interviewed his top student. I want to interview Craig Wright. I interviewed his top student from the dojo, Satoshi Dojo. And he was telling me all about, you know, BSV, which is, you know, Bitcoin Satoshi Vision. But everybody thinks that Craig Wright is a fraud. He's a fake Satoshi, whatever. But the stuff that they were telling me, like, it goes contrary to everything that I've understood about Bitcoin Core. And I'm like, you know, it's kind of like took that stuck brain, like, you know, pulled it apart. So, and that was a paradigm shift to see, okay, this is how they're doing. This is how, you know, what I know. And sometimes that.
Okay, well, let's dive into this. I would love to get into this more. I want to bring this, you know, I think that it's going to help a lot in bridging this gap in security for our farm, right? For our inputs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you add that piece on top of the exchange of revenue, or, you know, loans. Our industry is so broken at moving capital back and forth. And so this is another great way at getting away from traditional lending and traditional banking and being able to find investment so much faster.
I want to add one thing.
Yeah, please.
I've interviewed about a number of metaverse founders around the world, right? And metaverse here, if you go to Silicon Valley, it's hype. It's all hype. It's 100% hype. Like, you know, metaverse, this, metaverse, that. But when you talk to the people who are actually building the metaverse, the number one thing that they have to work, the number two things that they work on is identity and security. Security is a big deal, but there are a lot of lessons, I think, that the security, when building security wise in the metaverse, can be applied to farmers.
100%. I think that, well, and again, just look at just the carbon tracking, right? I think that those are, yeah, there's so many pieces that you look at water rights, you look at mineral rights, you look at, you know, and this goes back to land ownership and deed transfers. And
identity and security. Big two
things. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for your time today. I would love to do this again. Please keep me in the loop with all of your fun activities this summer. I'm excited for your break and get to take some time off. But I'll send you over a calendar link also. And when you have time, no rush, I would love to really kind of outline what opportunities GHA has to really move forward on the data and the contracts and NFTs and multiple pieces.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you very much for coming. And thanks everybody for joining today. If you have any questions, like I said, don't hesitate to holler. Real quick, tell them again, how do we contact you? What do you look at? How do people find you?
You can contact me at Jamil@JamilHassan.com via email. And then my podcasts are all on Facebook. It's the Crypto Hipster Talks, Regeneration X, and Blockchain. It's a Crypto Hipster JH at the Facebook is the page. So you could do that. Or you can go to the Anchor FM and look for Irish Tech News and then try to sift through which ones are mine.
Huh, you're awesome. Can you search on there probably?
Probably.
Search my name on there. Okay, well, cool. I'm excited to hear where it's going next and transferring to next so that we can all join in and watch. And then I'll be sure to share it through my channel as well. Cool. But thank you very, very much. We'll see everybody.
Thank you.
See you later, sir.